right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are again for some more Survivor Season 40 content. What a surprise! But I am Colin here with you today for yet another draft, and my opponent in this week's podcast is someone you have heard if you listen to this, to our coverage of the challenge, or to the live feed updates over on RHAP. You can also find him blogging about Survivor over on robhasawebsite.com. Welcome back to the podcast, Matt Liguori. Liguori, how's it going?
I am fantastic. So excited to be here. I definitely wasn't begging you for the last like month to get me on and talking some Survivor 40. But I mean, what do you want? I cannot contain the excitement. It's been like months, not months. I don't know. Has it been like 2 months or so since we found out the cast? It's been a while, and it's just listening to all of the podcasts you guys have been doing has been so much fun to listen to. But I'm just like, I need to talk. I need to talk. I need to just get this out. There's so much to talk about here, and yeah. Very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to hear, I'm sure, a lot of hot takes coming from you today. This is not my first Survivor 40 podcast for anyone who has been missing them to this point. There are plenty of other drafts and so forth up on the main feed, as well as over on our patron feed, which you can get by subscribing at patreon.com/DomandColin. We have several additional drafts over there, including one that I just did this weekend against Austin Trupp. And what did we draft, Liguori? What did I draft against Austin Trupp? I'm genuinely spacing on what the subject was. I've done so many of them.
You drafted Challenge Beast.
Oh, that's
Austin,
right. Okay.
Because Austin, the Challenge Beast himself, it just made too much sense.
Thank you for knowing that, because we drafted the for who's going to do the best in the challenges over the course of Survivor 40. So if that would interest you, one more time, patreon.com/DomandColin. What we are here to do today is talk through and draft the cast from the perspective of something I wish I remembered whom to be crediting here with this idea, but I liked the idea when I heard it, of the fewest votes cast against people. So we're each going to draft a team of 10 people, and whoever's team collectively has the fewest votes cast against them over the course of the season will be the winner of this draft. But before we get into that, Liguori, it has been a wild week or so in the Survivor 40 news department. What has been, before we dive into this cast specifically, your take on what we know about the season and the twists and so forth to this point?
I feel like you got kind of like the same answer from Scally and Austin the past couple of drafts. It's just this is expected at this point. Just the fact that, I think you even tweeted something about this. You know, this is a great cast until all the twists come in and they're going to turn everything upside down and make it not as fun as we thought it would be. We were foolish, I guess, if any of us had like such high hopes that we were like, wow, 20 great players, they're going to give us not back to basics. I mean, everybody knew there was going to be idols. We knew there was going to be whatever they typically have these days. But it was obviously very disappointing. It kind of let the air out of the balloon to just have, all right, here's Edge of Extinction is back. And then, I mean, I think there's a little bit less, upset about the whole the currency twist that's going to be involved. That could be interesting. I've seen a lot of people more, I don't know if excited is the right word, but just willing to accept that one, just because these people all have won the game. Like, you know, we're giving them something different to add into the game to try to play with it, just to try to see what they can do. I don't know if this was the right season to test it on, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe 39 will have something like this too. Probably not, but I don't know. I think Edge of Extinction was so bad for so many different reasons. So to see it being brought back for such an exciting cast for the season 40, for season all winners, we've been waiting for this for how long? It's very disappointing and disheartening, but yeah. I'm trying really hard not to let it like ruin my excitement completely.
Yeah, and that's something I think over the course of this last week, now that I've had some more time to let all of this news sink in, I really do want to stress at the end of the day, I'm still tremendously excited overall for this season. And I think this cast is such a lock to be the greatest cast of all time, frankly, that despite Edge of Extinction being at least in the hunt for worst twist in the history of Survivor, I still think this has a tremendous shot to be one of the best seasons that has ever been aired. And I know that over all of these podcasts I've done, especially with more of the breaking news that has come out these last couple of weeks, perhaps a more negative tone may have come across from time to time. But overall, I'm still very stoked to see what season 40 has in store for us. It's more, I am terrified about season 39 and the seasons that are to come after we have casts of this caliber.
Yeah, the future of Survivor is terrifying to think about. I have no idea, you know, how crazy they're going to keep going with these twists, because I mean, obviously Probst is loving all of this stuff. If he's putting it on the all winter season, if he's just continuing to add on more and more and more, this is the direction we're going in. And if you're not a fan of it, you're probably not a fan of modern Survivor. I mean, in general, and I know that we're all kind of starting to feel that way. We're all starting to feel a little bit of like resentment for the fact that this isn't our Survivor. This isn't the show that we love, but you know, it's changing, but there's some, I don't know. There's still, for me, I guess at the end of the day, this is still Survivor. And the season that we're talking about, season 40, all winners, it's hard to not have hope that this will be a legendary season of Survivor. Like you said, there is negativity. A lot of, you know, we're definitely concerned about what this is going to be. But I don't know. The same thing, like, I'm a Big Brother fan, Colin. I have to stay optimistic or I am just not going to enjoy any of the content that I'm consuming and wasting our time podcasting and discussing about forever. So.
Yeah, I mean, the good news for you is your pain threshold in that capacity seems to be quite high.
It is. And, you know, every season of Big Brother, you know, you like to diabolically laugh that you're not watching. And sometimes I'm like, Colin, this is good. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe he's right. So I don't know. This season is still up in the air as to where that's going to be. But that's another podcast.
Yeah. I mean, to tack on to something you said, and I got into this a little bit with Austin in that Challenge Beast Draft podcast. But like the timeline where, for instance, Ben Driebergen goes on to spend some time on Edge of Extinction and then come back in and idol or challenge his way and win another fire competition and win the season again, and now is suddenly in that Sandra territory of automatically in the conversation for greatest players in the history of Survivor. To me, what I have always loved about this show is the game element, the social, political, strategic game that is underway on what happens to be an island, but for all I care, it could be inside a mansion. If Ben, for instance, again, is suddenly in the all-time discussion about greatest Survivor players of all time, I think, obviously, we are then going to be at the point where we're just talking about completely different things when it comes to modern Survivor and the idea of Survivor in my mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's already enough debate about previous winners, such as the current current, as far as we know, only two-time winner and how, you know, that person's game ranks against other winners. And, you know, we've been having these winner rankings debates and all this kind of stuff for years. So just the fact that now we're adding in a whole different element of the game and a whole different, like, way that people are going to the end and winning. Like, how do you ever rank Chris Underwood's win with everybody else's? And how, if the same thing happens again on this season, how do you even entertain that conversation of a possible Ben Driebergen, you know, comes back from extinction and wins the season? I just don't know how you can combine the conversation to talking about Ben's two-time wins versus Sandra's two-time wins versus Kim's one-time win that she did, you know, in one of the most impressive fashions that we've ever seen. So it's going to be really tricky for at least discussions going forward. I don't think CBS or Probst gives a shit what we have to say anyway. So, you know, they're just going to keep doing them, and we'll have to just keep, like I said, hoping for the best.
There is absolutely no doubt about it. And every time I have conversations of this nature, I really feel compelled to go out of my way to stress, I have no idea what it takes to keep a show like this on network TV in primetime in the year 2019. And I understand that for Probst and all the other showrunners, the casual fan's opinion is 10 to 50 times more valuable than anything you or I, LaGore, is about to say over the next hour.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very heavy hand, especially these days in making their determination of who the fans are going to fall in love with over the season. As you can see from the glowing edits of somebody like Rick Devens versus like how the online fans have been looking at it. So they push their narratives however they want to anyways. So, that's is what it is.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into this fewest votes against draft, I don't think it would tip too much to ask you just when you found out about this cast overall a couple of months ago, who were the names that really stood out for you in terms of, oh, I'm so glad that that person ended up making it onto the cast?
I mean, this cast is like, it has just about everybody that we could have asked for. The noticeable people that were missing were the people who were initially on the list and then ended up not being there in Richard and I don't know why I called them Richard, Hatch and Tina. I very much thought that they would both be there. It made so much sense that they would be there, but I guess it also makes sense why Hatch isn't there. So I guess surprised about those two. But in terms of like who was I elated to see made the cast, you and I share the same level of standing for Parvati Shallow. I am so excited that Parvati made it out here. I don't know how much they're paying her to be out there. I think a lot of them are probably collecting some pretty big paychecks because they don't need to go on another season. They have their families, they have their kids. I feel like Parvati is one of them who was like, make sure the check looks right so that I'll definitely come back. So Parvati, you have Boston Rob, who admittedly I am a Boston Rob fan from day one, and that's not changing here. But freaking Amber is back to play Survivor. Whoever ever would have imagined that Amber Mariano, the winner of one of my favorite seasons of Survivor, don't kill me, everybody. I've talked about this before, though, is back for another shot. I have no idea. I know that she's your winner pick. I know that she's I just cannot believe that she's here. It's going to be completely insane to see her and Rob out there together, see her play again. But just this whole cast. I love Natalie Anderson. So happy she's here. Kim, the whole cast is great.
Yeah, and I mean, to say nothing of people like Danny Boatwright or Ethan or Yule, where it genuinely seems like Survivor fan fiction. It's incredible. I never thought we would see any of these folks back. And I think you are right that an appearance fee was probably in order for plenty of them. And it made me wonder, I really want to know the final number that Cochran turned down, because I'm sure they put up a compelling bid for him and he just was not willing to risk it.
Yeah, I'd say that's a very good call. He definitely, I mean, they're not going to offer him like more than they're offering like Boston Rob or Sandra, are they? Just because like, I mean, these are all the big names. But it's not like we have to have Cochran on this season or it just doesn't make sense, because I'm looking at this cast right now. It still makes sense. It's still great. And I don't think I've heard even one complaint from anybody that I talk to like, oh, wow, Cochran's missing from this season. Like, no, I mean, people have been saying more so like I was saying about like Hatch and Tina not being here. I haven't heard anybody complain that Cochran's not here. So if they, whoever made the decision to not raise that paycheck, I think they made the right call. I think we're fine without him.
No, I agree. And I also don't think I've heard much belly aching over Cochran being absent here, but I just would be very curious to find out where the line still, I would just love to find out that number, which I obviously never will, but that some number exists that Cochran still said no to.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there's like other people out here that I have to imagine, like possibly like joking, but like probably like had to pay CBS to put them on the cast. Like there's no chance that, the top of the list had a Nick Wilson to be out here. So, whether it's just filling a spot or this person said no or whatever it is, they just want the recent winner. It's funny how some of them had like probably an insane appearance fee and some of them is probably like, oh, we're just casting you for a second season. Come on in.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into this, Ligori. We are drafting two teams of 10, and whoever's team ends up with the fewest votes cast against them at Tribal's Council along the way is going to be the winner. I want to clear a couple things up before we begin the draft. The first is, every vote is equal as far as I would be concerned. There's no increasing number of points for like further down the line. Just every vote against your team is worth 1 point.
Sounds good.
And what a,
Okay, keep going. Yeah.
I was wondering what we do in the event of a tie and a revote that then changes the vote count. Do we just go with the final vote after the revote?
Probably, because I guess that's like the end result of the tribal council. So if somebody's changing their vote, like it's still in that tribal, so they're changing their vote to somebody else. I think that makes sense.
Okay. And then the final point I wanted to clarify is final tribal council. I don't think there should be a penalty for anyone not voting for you if you're in the finals. I think that shouldn't count against the person, but I do think it may be interesting if we docked point, or I guess added a point on, because it's kind of like golf where you want the low score, where for every juror who does not vote for the eventual winner, would that, could we consider that? Or is that's more of an incorrect vote cast.
Right. Well, what if it was just each vote for a winner on your team, those points go to the other person? Because you don't want to have points, right?
Let's just, all right, let's make this day one through day 37, and don't sweat the fire challenge and beyond.
We could do that too. And then what about votes that are like negated by an idol? Those still count as, or they do not count because there was an idol played. That's,
I could,
what do you
I'm
think?
Willing, in the spirit of this draft, which is to avoid being voted for, mm-hmm. I am willing to go either way on that one. Do you have a strong inclination about whether idled votes should count?
I don't know if I have a super strong inclination. I feel like if we're we're drafting people who are not going to get votes cast against them. So either way, the vote was cast against them just because it didn't count in terms of the game. I think it should still count for the draft.
Philosophically, I think that is the right ruling for this draft. I'm on board with that.
Sounds good to me.
All right. So I will let you select whether you would like the first pick or the numbers 2 and 3 picks, and then we'll alternate back-to-back picks from there.
I feel like Austin messed this up, and now there's a lot of pressure on me to potentially get this right, which
well, the good
this
news
isn't
for you
gonna
is
make
I have never had less clarity entering any of these drafts than I do on this one.
Okay, well, that fills me with some kind of confidence. I'll take the first pick just because there's one name on the board. This is like my strategy on the Dom and Colin network of challenge drafts. I've been taking the first pick lately, so I'll take the first pick here. And should I just jump right in?
Okay, I will put out there that there was someone who, to me, I was going to take as my easy number one, so I'll be interested in finding out if you ended up going for the same person.
All right, so without further ado, my first pick is somebody who I just think is too beloved as a human being, as a survivor person, just in general. I think it's hard to see people going out of their way to cast votes for Ethan Zahn unless it's absolutely necessary. I don't think he's going to get votes throughout the season just as throwaways. I think if Ethan gets voted out, it's going to be this one time that we're putting votes on him and sending him home. But I really just don't see a whole lot of votes going Ethan's way.
I had Ethan at number 2 on my board. He was initially number 1 until I put some deeper thought into one person in particular, but I absolutely agree. Ethan, when I was first thinking through my draft board, was the immediate name that came to mind in terms of not only people really liking Ethan pretty much no matter what he does within the game, I would assume. I would also guess that Ethan is going to be one of the lower profile targets, to kind of put it in more positive terms than it may be in practice out there on the island, where I do not know how many people are going to be really worried about Ethan.
Absolutely. I think it would have been the same thing if it was like, honestly, like a Tina or somebody. So just the winners that are from that era, I feel like they're so far removed from the game. And I know that Tina just played more recently, so maybe that was a bad example. But somebody like Ethan, who can easily come into this game and say, I have no idea what to do with an immunity idol. I know that I should probably have one, but I don't know where I would look and I don't know what I would do with it. So somebody just take my hand and walk with me and I'll stay by your side and I'll help you out. So I don't know if, there's always the chance that he links up with a strong player and then somebody takes him out because he's attached to them, whatever. But I just feel like you said, I don't know. I just think Ethan is too, his story, his life story, his survivor story, just everything put together. You don't want to get rid of this guy unless you need to. I think he's, I guess you said you had him number 2. He's got to be my number 1 pick of somebody who just won't get votes cast against him unless, like I said, necessary.
Yeah. What do you think about Ethan overall? Do you see this kind of general adoration for him being enough to having been away from the game and I think away from the show for quite some time at this point, give him even average equity as far as you're concerned?
I don't know. I think my ultimate call at the end of the day is I don't see Ethan winning. I think he could make it to the finale. You know, easily could see him in the final six or seven, thinking of somebody like a Kimi Kappenberg, just in terms of like, you know, a recent person who played that, you know, was from a far back season that just ended up going far in the same kind of way that, you know, Kimi hadn't seen an idol before. So I'm just kind of thinking like, he can go far, but is anybody going to want to sit next to Ethan in the final three? Probably not. Of course, there's Fire Making and there's Edge of Extinction. And even if he's out, there's a million ways to win your way back in. So it's impossible to predict for it these days. This is fun. This is a lot of fun. But I don't know. I just don't see it for Ethan at the end of the day.
All right. So there goes Ethan Zahn, a very defensible number one pick, I would say. And that brings it over to me. So the one person who, after further review, I thought merited almost a tier by herself here, as in the fewest votes against draft. I don't want to tip too much of my overall strategy right now, but I feel like for a number of reasons, I see a lot of timelines where she gets all of the votes, but that's still potentially better like at a given tribal council. But I was doing just like the math on it, and someone being the decoy boot like two or three times, I think, is still a net worse result than taking someone who leaves unanimously in the first couple of weeks. So combining that with what I would consider to be an extremely low likelihood of being a target once we hit the merge and there are a ton of people casting votes at Tribal Council where someone can put up like a double-digit vote number in one shot, I will take with the number two overall pick first on my team captain here, I guess, so to speak. Give me Sandra Diaz Twine. I continue to be the number one Sandra stan.
I know you don't want to tip your strategy too much, but I have to say I've thought about that as well. It's just, it makes too much sense that, you know, if they want to take a shot at Sandra, they say it's, you know, the third tribal council and she gets, I guess we don't know what the tribe breakdown is going to be, but she gets seven votes cast against her. Like you said, that makes sense. That's one vote. She's out of the game. And there's no chance for the entire season to be filled with Sandra votes here and there. So I think that's a very, very defendable pick. I think I don't know. I can't be feeling good about Sandra's overall chances to win. I think that's probably not the hottest take out there.
She's the best player. I mean, so far, 2 for 3, best win percentage among returnees.
You're not wrong. I don't know. I just I don't see it happening here. But I also don't exactly see her going down in the same way as she did in whatever that season was called that didn't really happen. So I think with all these pregame alliances that she has, she's the queen of all that. She's been with Rob for the past 100-something days of her life, you know, talking about what they're going to do this season. She has friends out there. So I think that she could potentially go farther than she should. But, you know, getting the win, I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, I believe that we are likely to, given that we're starting with 20 players, go after the first two votes into either three tribes or two new tribes, but have a swap at 18 players. And I think a very likely timeline for Sandra is actually making it through the first couple of votes, whether by immunity or not. But then I could see her being someone with a lot of bad swaps in her possible future, and that just being the undoing of her and potentially just leaving with like four votes against her at the fourth tribal council.
That's a terrible timeline, and I'm so excited to see Sandra anytime that she's on the screen. So, I mean, I'm not one of those people that's, you know, completely against this whole season 39 thing just because I love Sandra and I love Rob. I'm such a casual and I hate it, but what are you going to do? But I'm excited to see her back. So I hope that, that you're not right. And I hope that she is there for the entire season getting votes thrown at her left and right and this backfires, but, I don't know.
All right, so there goes Sandra, and with my next pick, I am going to take someone that I don't see standing out as a huge target for too many reasons. And also, I am slightly nervous that they could be leaving early, which in this draft could be a good thing, where you can't get votes cast against you if you're not still in the game. And even in the – well, I still see plenty of very positive timelines for this person, and there's someone I think has at least an average amount of win equity out there. I just in terms of the kind of under-the-radar upside – give me, at this point, Denise Stapley, I think, could do a good job just kind of skating by and going unnoticed. And I don't see her style being something that people are actively afraid of too often. So I will take her at this juncture.
I've got to say, since the cast has been released, since, you know, we've stared at the list 100 times, just looking over everything, I've really started to get higher on Denise's chances, just because, you know, she's not the biggest threat out there. I feel like all my takes are just going to be things that people have said over and over on all the season 40 podcasts. You've just done like 100 of them by now. But Denise is she's just a cool, neat lady. Haven't you ever met a neat lady? I feel like she's just somebody that I would want to hang out with out there, somebody that I wouldn't be threatened by. There's so many bigger targets out there, and Denise is just a reliable number. You know that she's not the biggest, like, manipulator, I guess. You know, she made it to every tribal council in her season with Malcolm by her side. There's just that picture in your head of, like, look, she stayed loyal to him the entire time. You know, they went all the way to Final Four together. I don't see why not take this person to Final Four with me and just hope that I can knock her out right at the very end. So and along the way, you know, I don't know if she's getting a lot of votes. So this is a great pick, and I'm not happy that you took her.
Yeah, I think the big concerns for not only Denise, but I had the same concern about Ethan, is they may be someone who is so known as not being super interested in idols, probably, that if one side is nervous that the other side may have an idol or two in their pockets, Ethan and Denise may stand out as kind of straightforward votes for people who are going to be very low-risk candidates in that regard.
Yeah, it makes sense, as much as I don't want to believe it. But I don't know. I don't know who Denise is even, like, close with. I know that there's so many people out here that are in pictures with everybody else from, you know, the winners' meetings and clubs that they've had, you know, over the past couple of years, you know, all the charity events that Sandra goes to, every single one of them. But I don't know. I haven't seen Denise at many of them. So I'm hoping that that doesn't hurt her out there. I mean, I'm sure she does have connections, and maybe I just don't know about all of them or most of them. But I need her to find somebody to link up with and to avoid that possible fate that you were just laying out.
Yeah, well, if there's anyone that I have faith in to make quick connections that people and make people feel good about them right away, Denise has got to be very high on the list, even out of this loaded cast.
I absolutely agree.
All right. It is back over to you.
All right. So I'm going to go with, I guess, a similar strategy to, I think, the Sandra pick. Or maybe it's more of a similar – no, that's not. It's probably more similar to my Ethan pick. I'm going to take Yul Kwan here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your gut reaction is on that one.
Yul was near the middle of my board, but I would love to hear why he's so high for you.
Just kind of – I hate to say this, but, like, he's kind of just boring when you look at this cast. And when you're thinking of people that are going to be – going out early, it's going to be I'm thinking of game changers. I'm thinking of all of the big players that were knocked out early. You have to imagine that something similar might happen here. Yul's not one of those big players that you're thinking about, you know, right away. So if he does manage to skate by to the merge, you know, of course he could be taken out at any time, but I just don't see him being that guy that gets votes at every tribal council on the way there. I think he's similar to Ethan, just kind of like a steady number to be by your side. And if you're going to get rid of him, like I said, it's going to take one vote, not like every vote as a decoy, I think.
Yeah. My concern about Yul was chiefly that I was quite nervous about picking people I could see being frequent targets early post-merge, just racking up a ton of points while staying in the game. And Yul stood out as someone who could be a candidate for that. But At the same time, if we're looking through some of these older school players and the bigger surprises to be out here, I would say if any of them were the front runner to show up and very quickly adapt to the modern game, I would have to imagine it would be Yule, right?
Yule is one of the smartest people on this cast, if not the smartest. So, 100% that he's just, you know, I don't know how much he's, admitted to watching or how much, I don't know if he's even been on a single, you know, episode of, Rob as a Podcast since, you know, his time. Well, I mean, he obviously wasn't on the podcast on his time because that was forever ago. But I don't know. He's obviously not somebody very active in the community. We were surprised to see his name pop up on the list when they went out for filming. At least I was. I had no idea that Yule was somebody even interested in playing again. Maybe that was public knowledge and I wasn't aware of it, but it was just surprising to see him out there. And I think he probably has been keeping a tab on the game and on the players throughout the years. So I think he's probably going to be one of the more underestimated players out there. But I don't know. It remains to be seen how well he'll mesh in with the people that he might not have the connections with. A similar concern that I had for Denise.
Just because I feel like hating myself for a little bit, Yule's original season aired in 2006. Liguori, what grade were you in 2006?
2006, I was in sixth grade. I was. Oh, okay. I have the luxury of, since I graduated in 2012, sorry, everybody, I was in that grade of every year of the 2000s. So.
Oh, wow. What a blessing that is.
It really is.
It's like
I'll
the
never
people
forget.
Who were born in 2000 just have it. They're just home free for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, in my mind, the over-under was like third and a half grade. So that that makes me feel at least a little bit better.
Yes, I was in sixth grade. Well, my first, like I said, my first season was, or I don't know if I said that just now, but my first season was All-Stars. So what was that, 2004? So I was in fourth grade and what was that, like 8 years old? I started as young as I possibly feel like I could have.
Have you just been watching straight through?
Yeah, well, since All-Stars, so.
Right.
Straight through, and then I went back. It took me forever to get to Thailand. I don't know why. I watched, you know, I watched Borneo. I had the DVDs. I watched Australian Outback. But for some reason, and then eventually when I watched, you know, 3, 4, I don't know why it took me so long to watch Thailand.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever, are you a big rewatcher of Survivor seasons?
Yeah. I mean, I rewatched, like 3 or 4 years ago. And then I rewatched again when the, Evolution of Strategy came out. And then, kind of recently I was going through and watching not the full season, but kind of, I think I was telling you about this. I was watching some of the finales just to, see these winners back in their, you know, their final stand of their season. So that was a fun activity.
All right. So there goes Yule at number 4, and you have another pick here.
I do. And this one is not one that I feel like super confident about with the whole votes against thing, but I share a similar feeling to our friend Brian Scally in terms of I think this is a very likely candidate to go all the way to the end and hopefully maybe possibly win the game. So I'm just going to put my eggs in Natalie Anderson's basket and hope for the best.
Okay. Natalie Anderson was another person who was near the middle of my board, probably like number 8, 9, 10 in that range, just because I do worry about Natalie being viewed as a threat out there. I feel like her first time around was obviously a very impressive game, but it seems like, you know, even in very loaded all-star casts, people generally have done their homework, and the players who played their first time, like Natalie, are often viewed as big threats. Even there are plenty of, I think, lower key winners on here that Natalie may stand out a bit.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I would be scared to vote against Natalie. I mean, I don't want that wrath against me. I saw what she can do, when you get on her bad side, when you get, you know, you vote out her friend, you know, you vote out Jeremy and she's coming after you. So I just don't want to be on that side. I feel like somebody like a Parvati, somebody like a Sandra will see that in Natalie. And while it might seem intimidating, they're going to want that on their side rather than wanting to be fighting against it. That's just, the general way that I feel about Natalie's game going into it. I feel like despite the fact that she might be a threat, I feel like that's a weapon that people are going to want to use against other players rather than being the person fighting it.
Is Natalie the most consistently highly rated player on just like everyone's draft board that you've seen?
Probably. Do you remember what she went for in your auction draft? Do you remember?
Around 30-ish probably, and
yeah,
when the top people were going for 40 or so, I think that was still a good price on her.
Yeah, I was just looking at the auction draft that I did with Taryn and all them. Natalie went for $28 to Scally's team on that one. So, and that was one of the highest prices of the entire draft. So, yeah, Natalie has been pretty high up there in most people's draft boards, I would say.
Is she for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't remember if I have her in any of my other drafts because I feel like those were months ago. But I definitely feel great about her, and it might just be a heart pick because I really want her to do well. But I'm just so excited she's here, and I'm just going to keep hoping for the best.
All right. So it is back over to me, and I am going to make two more picks for almost identical reasons that I made the Denise pick earlier, just feeling good about both of these people not being viewed as big threats too regularly. And in the event that they do get voted out, I think it'll be kind of one and done situations rather than a lot of, you know, votes piling up from tribal council to tribal council. So I will give both of these names simultaneously just because the rationale is virtually identical in each case. Give me Michelle Fitzgerald and Danny Boatwright here with my next two picks.
Danny was pretty high on my board. I just remember how late in the draft Danny went in the draft that you did about final tribal council zero vote getters? It was probably like one of the last picks, right?
I believe she was one of the last picks. One of the last picks, yeah.
Yeah, so I share that feeling. I feel like Danny is somebody who, she falls into the category of not all that threatening just from, you know, looking at the rest of the cast. You're not worried about Danny as much. So if she slips on by, keeps hanging on all the way to the end, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want to sit next to Danny in the final tribal council. I'm not worried about her having a ton of friends on the jury that are going to vote for her. I'm not worried about her beating me in a fire making challenge, which, I mean, I don't know why I said that or why I feel that way. It's just, you know, we haven't seen her on Survivor. We haven't seen her talk about Survivor in years. So I'm just, you know, just from my perspective, I don't see her as somebody to be scared of.
Right. And just to clarify what I mean about like this type of player, the Denise, Michelle, Danny, in as far as I can tell, having more equity to only get votes in like one or two tribal councils as opposed to several is I just don't see them being viewed as like the figurehead of the opposing alliance that the minority is constantly gunning for.
Absolutely. I feel a little bit differently about Michelle just because one of the thoughts that has been kind of swirling in my head looking at this cast is maybe there might be some kind of like recent winners grouping alliance that gets, you know, formed with Michelle, Wendell, Nick, Adam. Like you have to imagine those guys might be looking out for each other. And then I'm thinking, you know, but what if the Rob and Sandra crew is bigger and then they notice that that's a thing and they want to start taking shots at those guys? Wendell's probably going to be the top of the hit list for that. So I'm more worried for those two than I was in the past, just since I've started having those thoughts. But still a good pick.
Yeah, until you listed those names off of the recent winners that are going to be out there and potentially interested in working together, it had literally never even crossed my mind that there's a nice batch of winners there in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, and they have to be, like I said, they just have to be thinking, we have to look out for each other. There's all of these other players who have known each other for years, and they have to have some kind of, you know that Rob has Sandra's back and Tyson's back and obviously Amber's out there. And maybe they're thinking like, well, we played on a season with Ethan, we'll pull him in. So you have to be thinking that those guys are going to be looking at Ben, Jeremy, and saying like, listen, we have to stick together and just, even if it's not like a outward alliance, just kind of like not be gunning for each other because Rob's crew will be coming for us.
I hope it all comes down to like Tony in the middle between the young guns and the OGs.
Yeah, if that's the line, we're in for a fun season.
Yeah. All right. So what do you think about just Michelle's overall winner chances? I know she is the official winner pick of both Casual Anna and Matt Gagan.
Yeah, it's a popular pick. I think just as much as Natalie Anderson is high on the board, Michelle is also high on the board. For most people, Michelle is that Amber pick that, you know, the person that you think people will forget about, I just don't know if we're still playing that same game with the same, you know, ambush strategy that's going to get somebody a win in Modern Survivor, I think.
I would say we are decidedly not, and that concerns me about Michelle.
Right, that's just my concern. That's just I don't think that there's much of a chance for that player to be the favorite or to be that person where you're like, ooh, I thought about this more than everybody else, and I know that, which, not to completely shade on Matt and Anna's picks, I just feel like that is something that we thought about going into, like, a Game Changers. We thought, okay, maybe, like, Andrea, maybe this is her season. Maybe Sierra Dawn Thomas or Haley Ford, like, they're going to be that player that just goes under the radar. Nobody thinks about them, and then they're going to win. It didn't happen, and I just don't think that we're in a situation where modern Survivor allows for that to happen anymore.
Right, and again, Game Changers never happened at all, so don't sweat
it. Didn't. Yeah, I totally agree.
Right. So it is now back over to you.
Yes, it is. And I don't love that. I didn't, just for, in case anyone gives a crap, I didn't make, like, a full list. I just kind of made three spots on an index card, and I separated into names, and then there's arrows pointing everywhere, and it's just a jumbled mess. And I also, while we were doing the introductions to this, I counted, and I was like, shit, there's only 19 names on here. I was missing somebody. Nick was not on my board. So I've now updated to the full 20 names, and I'm still stalling for time. I'm going to go with my first pick here to be Amber. Ooh, I don't know why I did that.
Well, she was number Amber. One on my board, so that's probably
was
why.
She? Wait, number one?
Number one remaining on my board.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so all right. So I'll snipe Amber from you, and I'll just say that the only reason that I think Amber won't get votes cast against her is, well, I guess two reasons. Similar to the Ethan and Yule thing, I don't know if you're looking at her as one of the biggest threats, but there is the Boston Rob factor where, you know, if somebody's going to take a shot at Rob without directly taking the shot, then they might go for Amber. And if they do that, I do think, like you said, with some of your other picks, it'll just be in one shot. I think we'll just wipe Amber right off the board, and she won't be able to get votes for the rest of the game. Because like we were saying earlier, she just won't be there. So that's my first pick.
It's weird that we're going to be rooting against everyone on our team to re-enter for Edge of Extinction.
Yeah, no, because we were just talking earlier about just to make sure what kind of draft we were doing, and I was like, that's something that came into consideration. I was like, this is a completely different kind of draft, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm glad we did this. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna start waiting in unlikelihood of winning the Edge challenge as like my new tiebreaker.
There we go. And you know how much I like keeping track of things week to week. So, you know, as well, actually, no, you don't know that, because when we did our challenge draft, it took you until me screaming at you on the last podcast of the season for you to know that I was the one who kept track of the points.
I'm getting buried by the edit here. That is completely out of context.
All right. Well, the tapes exist, so I'll take some joy in that. And all right. Enough stalling. My next pick is going to be Adam Klein.
Okay. Go for it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I took Adam with, I think, the most money that I spent in my auction draft that I did. What did I spend on him? I spent $30 on Adam. So obviously was feeling pretty good about him at the time. Still have no reason to feel a whole lot differently. Even if he's in that alliance with the recent winners, I just kind of feel like he made those connections with the older winners with the past year or 3 years, whatever it's been, that he's been going to all these events and talking to them. So I just kind of feel like he knows enough people where I'm not super worried about him.
So Adam is someone that I'm very high on in terms of overall win equity, because I have a lot of faith in Adam as a player. But at the same time, I do think in a lot of timelines, he will be viewed for a lot of the game as a pretty big threat. And that for that, you know, for that reason, Adam was actually near the bottom of my board here. I think Adam like fourth or fifth from the bottom.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I mean, he was in my middle tier, and I still have people in my first tier that I haven't taken yet. But like I said, it's just kind of thrown together on an index card. I just feel good about him. I don't know. I just feel like he is not. He's somebody that's capable of doing well in all aspects of the game. He's fine in challenges. I think he'll be fine with the social game. I think he easily could be Well, I don't know if he's like the top contender to win his way back in from extinction or anything if he ends up there, but I just feel, you know, he can find idols. Why not? So I just feel like if he's average enough at everything, maybe he's just not the biggest threat in anything. Did that come
so
out
like,
the way? I don't know.
Like a male Amanda Kimmel?
Yes.
All right. And what do you think about for both Adam and Amber, just overall winning chances?
I'm not as high as you are on Amber's winning chances.
Mine have gone down drastically since finding out about some of these twists.
That's fair. I don't know. I mean, but even before the twist, I didn't exactly see it. I feel like the amount of people out there that are not going to want to see a Rob or Amber Mariano win is probably like 17 of them. with Sandra being the other one who would probably be fine with it. I don't see a whole lot of love for the Marianos being the ones to walk away victorious here. And for Adam, I mean, if he's there, he's probably got a very good shot at it. But he's also got Adam's tricky, right? Like Adam could be the Spencer of this season. Adam could get there and, you know, he doesn't have like the story, I guess, that he had. I don't know. He didn't win because of his story. You know, he I think deserved the win, based on his game in that season, but I think he could be the guy who just plays the game so hard. If he ends up there with the Jeremy's going to win.
Yeah, that's actually when we did the zero vote finalist draft. Adam wasn't like a high pick for me, but when I did or whenever he came off the board, that was the exact comparison I made about just at least a possible concern is the Spencer Bledsoe effect come Final Tribal Council.
Yeah, absolutely. Think that could be in play.
All right, so it is back over to me now, and with my next pick, I think I'm just going pure value in terms of basically the same logic you applied to Ethan early on, but to probably much lesser extent in terms of just like personal sympathy or admiration, but in terms of just ability to connect with people in such a way that they immediately like them and never want to see any harm come to them. The time has come for Kim Spradlin to come off the board here. Give me Kim with my number 5 pick and the number 10 pick overall, which may even be a little low for Kim in a draft like this, as far as the scouting reports would probably say.
I can't even tell you how afraid I am for this season for the sole reason of I don't want to see anything bad happen to Kim myself. And that's the logic you just used to make this pick. I just am terrified. And I know I'm thinking of like the darkest timeline here, but just Kim going anything before like jury would just break my heart. Like I don't want to see it. I don't want her. I mean, it's not going to break her. It's not going to damage her reputation. We saw Tony go out second in whatever that season might have been called. And, you know, everybody still thinks of Tony as the winner from 28. But I'm just so terrified that something is going to happen to Kim this season that is just not going to finish her story, I guess, in a way that I want it to be. I don't know. I'm scared for it.
Yeah, well, the good news is there is no pre-jury this season as long as she doesn't quit. So
that's a very good point, and I forgot. so yeah, right. good call.
Yeah, and you feel decent enough about Kim's overall chances to potentially run it back?
No.
No good? You're that worried, or is this just you know, pessimism so that your lowered expectations can make you feel better when things are okay?
No, I'm that worried. I think I'll tell you this, like my bottom square, I think I had actually talked to you about this back when we were like all doing a million drafts at once. My four that I just said I don't think really have a chance to win the game, it was Sandra, Rob, Parvati, and Kim. I just think that seeing any of the four of them not taken out before the final three, it just does not seem like. I think that all four of them are going to struggle more than anybody else out there. I mean, you could probably throw Tony in there as well, but I think that the four of them specifically are going to have the hardest road to get to the end.
Okay. Well, let's throw Tony out there right away. With my next pick, I'm going to use the Scally logic from the other draft, which is if you're voted out immediately, it's hard to get votes cast against you. And I unfortunately feel like that is at least a plausible circumstance that Tony Vlachos could find himself in. And furthermore, I feel along the way that the effort to get him out is not going to, like, it's either going to happen or not happen. He's going to either take control or he's going to be gone. And in a draft like this, that seems like a good thing.
Yeah, that's fair. And I really hope that Tony's appearance, his second appearance on Survivor, was enough to make people not be as worried about him, just not because they it was like, oh, he went out second and now he's not a threat anymore. More so just in terms of like, okay, we see that everybody knows that this guy has to go. We see that everybody knows what, you know, that at any moment we probably could get a group together and take Tony out. Like, it's a very clear person that needs to get out of the game at any given point. I don't know who is going to take Tony under their wing and use him as that, maybe as a shield or just as a weapon, in the same way that I was saying that Natalie Anderson could get used as a weapon. Like I said, I don't know who it's going to be, but I think there is potential for Tony to be used in that way and maybe not go as early as we think he might go. Maybe that's just hope, but I feel better about Tony than I do or than I thought I would.
My new dream is, as you like, the scenario that you flagged up earlier of the OGs fighting against the new kids, and Tony finds himself in like the Johnny Fairplay fans versus favorites spot of like deciding between the two sides in the middle, and then Tony chooses not to quit as his response.
Right, and Sarah is the one who thinks she's actually in the middle. She thinks she's the president, and it turns out Tony was the president all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there goes Tony. You mentioned him in your right outside, at least, the tier of people who just have no chance of winning or are going to have an extremely uphill battle of making it to the end at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, I have to imagine you kind of agree with that, right?
I do. Just, I think. But it is completely a testament to what a performance he put on in Cagayan.
Yeah. I mean, just. That will never be replicated. You know, there's been a couple players since Tony that it's like, oh, is this guy the new Tony? Is this guy supposed to be the new? I mean, even as recent as the War Dog. But is that gameplay ever going to be replicated? Is there ever a chance for quote unquote the next Tony to do something like that again, to make it all the way to the end? I think Tony was as much of a unicorn as people say he is, and hard to see it happening again for a different Tony or this Tony. So I don't know. So I'm up next with two picks.
You are.
Okay. So I think I will take the last remaining guy on my left side of my index card, which is the good side, which is going to be Wendell Holland.
Mm-hmm. He was I actually meant to say, sorry, when I took Tony, the only guy I had higher on my board than Tony was Ethan, and Wendell was the next one down.
So your list is just guys at the bottom kind of thing?
Not entirely, but overall, that was definitely the trend of my draft board, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, so taking Wendell here, I don't know. I just feel good about him getting to the end, and, you know, of course, you know, he could get some votes along the way and maybe, you know, kind of ruin my my draft team here, but a lot of winners get to the end without getting votes cast against them. So I don't know, just kind of hoping for the best from Wendell here. I think he's a lovable guy.
Yeah. I think, I'm not going to call it worst case scenario for Wendell, 'cause there's certainly timelines where he's just routinely viewed as a threat and people are putting their votes on him for one reason or another, because it's never that bad an idea, to get Wendell out of this game of Survivor. But I would guess that the scenario I would be trying to avoid in drafting Wendell here would be like, he gets through the whole pre-merge basically untouched, but then just gets 12 votes dumped on him at the merge or right around there. I feel like that is at least a possibility.
Whoever gets that merge vote is like, screwed. So screwed. Like, that's a lot of votes to potentially get on whoever gets that person's team.
And, I don't know if it's even necessarily it certainly could be the merge vote specifically, but I think generally we see at least a somewhat split, kind of like 8-5 or 9-4 merge vote, and then it's really the next two after that when the minority people are trying to like bail and get in with the new majority. Like, it's the one after the merge and the one after that that are the real sweats, I would say.
Yeah, it's just the Elizabeth vote from David versus Goliath that sticks out in my head of, like, single vote going on to this person. And I was like, okay, I really need to avoid this. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you avoid Elizabeth as the merge vote, because that's not a typical merge vote by any stretch of the imagination from what we usually think of it as. But yeah, that's the one that's really scared me. So hopefully that's not Wendell. And with my next pick, I'm going to go with the same strategy that we had with kind of with Sandra or with Tony. I think Tyson Apostle is getting taken out, if he gets taken out, in one vote. I don't know if he's just getting votes dumped on him time and time again. I think he's got the same kind of charm as somebody like a Wendell or maybe a Jeremy. I mean, I know Tyson's a little like skeezier than some of those guys, but I think that there will be a little bit more Tyson love than there has been in the past, because he is just such a nice guy. I don't know. Maybe that's just Tyson as a dad that is changing my perception of him, but I have some confidence in him.
He was relatively near the bottom of my board, but I will fully own that I have no real way near the bottom of my board of really distinguishing one person from the other. It just seems like a bunch of people who are constantly going to be viewed as big threats pretty much no matter what they do. And it would never surprise me to see them pick up votes from the minority side in a tribal council.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's the concern about the whole, you know, the Rob's army of whoever, you know, the group of people that we've been talking about that he might be, you know, having in his pocket already. I'm worried about all of them. I think that if everybody else is smart enough to realize that they have to go after, you know, Rob and Sandra and Tyson and that side of the game, then Tyson's easily somebody who could, you know, end up just say they split the votes on Rob and Tyson, and then, you know, Rob goes first, and then they split the votes on Tyson and Sandra. I mean, of course, there's a million swaps along the way or twists that'll probably prevent them from being on the same tribe. But I don't know. I have no idea what to make of Tyson this season. I could see, like, if you told me he was your winner pick, I would say, yeah, I get it. If you told me that he was your first boot pick, I'd be like, yeah, I get it. So, yeah, I don't know.
I think there are a few people who fit that kind of mold. I remember in one of the recent drafts I did, flagging up Sarah Lucina as someone I thought of as, like, potentially the highest variance person in the entire cast, in terms of it would not surprise me at all to see her win in a landslide, and it would not surprise me at all to see her be a unanimous first boot.
I don't know if I see the Sarah win, but I don't want to like spoil and a further ahead pick. You think Sarah can win in this cast on this season?
I think it's at least possible that Sarah will once again be like right in that middle tier of threats that seems to do quite well in all-star seasons. This is, you know, it's never the people we most suspect, and it's never the people we least suspect. Or I guess it is in the case of like Amber in the early days, but that the people in that kind of like mid threat stat tier tend to do pretty well. And I feel like Sarah was in exactly that kind of space in Game Changers and is going to be in that same kind of area this time around as well.
I have faith. The Heroes versus Villains was an iconic season, iconic cast, and had a great, iconic, likable winner. Game Changers was an awful season with an awful cast and had an awful person as a winner. So I have faith that this iconic cast will have somebody as their winner who we are all happy about. Okay. That's just the thought I have.
The Survivor gods are just going to smile on us.
That's my hope. That's what I'm holding on to.
Have you seen anything else that has happened in the last 3 years on Earth?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm talking about like Heroes versus Villains here. I'm just like, that's what I keep thinking of. I keep thinking of you know, that they knew what that season was, and I think. I mean, I'm not going to go into like a Heroes versus Villains like, you know, dissection right now, especially because I wasn't even like watching anywhere near, like I was such a casual with Survivor up until I started listening to podcasts. So a lot of what I learned about that season came from you guys, actually, with the Patreon rewatch, which if you haven't listened to it, I think people should. So I don't even know like how things were actually going down with that final vote. But I kind of feel like, right, like was there a sentiment that Parvati and Russell are the bad? Like, of course it was, right? Like those were the bad guys. We don't want them to win.
From a sentiment from whose perspective?
From the jury. Like that's like they were thinking.
Yes.
Right. So if that's the case, maybe they'll feel a similar way if Sarah ends up in the final three.
Okay.
Sarah's the bad guy.
Yeah. It certainly would not surprise me. So actually, what better transition, I suppose, than into my next pick, which for the sake of she was going to be my second pick this round, but I will just end up taking her here. Give me Sarah Lucina, just because I think there are plenty of timelines where she finds herself on the in crowd, but not viewed as one of the big targets from within that group. And I feel like that is right where you want to be if you want to avoid votes being cast against you.
I get that. I just, like I said, I really don't see a lot of things going her way this season. I feel like even if that the recent winners alliance comes together and Sarah is included in, you know, the recent winners, she's a little bit older than the rest of them, so I don't know how much she's fitting in. Is she gonna like jump ship and try to work with the people that are with some of the older winners that might be somebody that she can relate with more, and then the new winners get feel like they're betrayed by her or something? I don't know. I just, like I said, I don't feel it.
Okay. And again, I feel like with Sarah I would be 0% surprised, as I said, for her to go in there and also be the first boot. That would not blow me away by any stretch. I could see it going any different direction for Sarah. But with my other pick this round, who is spiritually being picked above Sarah, but technically the number 15 pick overall of this draft, give me Sophie Clark, kind of as the last person left on the board that I feel really good about very rarely being viewed as the biggest target from within her group, at least right away. Although it would not surprise me if the cat gets out of the bag when it comes to Sophie being a threat over the course of the season.
For sure. Sophie was the last name on the left side of my paper. I think that Sophie is somebody that I easily can see going far without being threatening enough to get votes put on her each time. I think Sophie is, I mean, if Yule isn't the smartest person on this cast, it's Sophie, I think. And that's just in terms of like, I don't know, because I mean, there are people who every single person on this cast has won the game. They all have studied the game. They all know the game. They've won it. So I don't know if I can say that Sophie's like the smartest Survivor player, but she's been watching in such a, I feel, critical, like with a critical lens over the past few years. She's done how many podcasts with Rob, you know, dissecting the strategy. And every time she's on, I'm just so impressed with everything that she has to say. Her reads are always so spot on. And I'm just, I feel like she'll be reading the game so well out there. And if she can translate that into her strategy and just, and knowing where to go and what, you know, what she needs to be doing next. I have confidence in Sophie, more confidence in Sophie than I once did.
To kind of contextualize what I think you're saying, it reminds me of one of my all-time favorite quotes from 30 Rock, which is Jack Donaghy telling Jenna she's unfit for something, and she's like, "What, Jack? Don't you think I'm intelligent?" And he says, "Jenna, look, there are many different types of intelligence, artistic, emotional, and then there's actual intelligence, which is what I'm talking about." And I think that's what you're talking about with Sophie and Yule.
That sounds about right. How happy are you that I just watched 30 Rock for the first time?
Ligori, despite being years overdue, it is absolutely one of the highlights of my year, knowing that you have finally seen 30 Rock.
I have a lot of catching up to do with a lot of shows that I somehow missed over the years because I spent all my time watching Degrassi. But
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, man, I'm telling you.
It's next.
You're going to love it. I can't wait.
It's literally the next thing on my list. I just have to get through an entire summer of Big Brother first, and then I'm like, oh, we'll get there.
Not an excuse. All right.
Well, it's mine.
Okay. So there goes Sarah and Sophie, and it is back over to you.
All right, so we have five left. We have Jeremy, Ben, Nick, Rob, and Parvati, if my scribbles are correct here. Mm-hmm. So I am going to take two of the people that are not in that horrifying four that I was mentioning earlier of I really don't have a whole lot of confidence in them to do well. First, I'm actually going to take Ben. who I thought that I might be taking higher than this. I went into this feeling a little bit better about Ben, just because, I mean, I know he's the guy who finds idols. He's the guy who can win fire, can win his way back into the game. But I just kind of feel like everybody can find idols this season. So is he, I mean, again, I'm sure like Matt Gagan is screaming into his phone right now that like this, you know, production is going to be planting idols around wherever Ben is sleeping. So
correct.
Ben will be finding
the
idols.
You are correct, Matt Gagan.
I know. So, I don't know. I just feel like because my original thought was that Ben might not be the guy getting all the votes, but if he is getting the idols, then he might get the votes. So I might regret this pick, but whatever, it's Ben.
Yeah, there were two deviations I made when we determined that votes that are idled will still count against you in this draft. And Ben fell to second to the bottom of my board, just because what I've seen from Ben is not that impressive in terms of preventing people from voting for him. I will happily grant that he is very good at finding idols through hook or by hook or by crook. Is that the expression?
It sounds good enough to me.
It's not through hook or through crook, I can tell you that much. But something to that effect is, whether fairly or unfairly, I've certainly seen Ben come up with idols, but I still remain to be convinced that Ben is going to be even an above average kind of social player in a cast like this.
And while I agree with you, and while everything you just said made me feel worse about the pick, I just feel like this is a different cast than the one Ben played with. I mean, the frustration that was growing with Ben his first time, when everybody just could not get the guy out. And obviously he became such a big target. You know, his social game was pretty shit and that didn't help. But this just is a different cast. I feel like he could have a brand new opportunity right in front of him to, just try. I don't know. I think there's so many different ways that he could go. I'm looking at the cast list. I just see so many different people that would probably want to work with him. I just don't see why he's the guy that you are. I know he's got the idols, but I just don't see him as much of a threat as the people on his season saw him as.
Well, yeah, the good news about idling your way through an entire endgame is you're never voting anyone out to speak of, and then when you return to Survivor, no one views you as a backstabber.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right, so there goes Ben, and you have another pick.
I do. Maybe just for the same kind of lovability factor as Kim, that, you know, you love this person so much that you just kind of know that they're snaking you, but you still love them anyway and want to see them reunited at the loved one's visit, which actually has everybody. So forget that I just said that. I think there's a lot of love for Jeremy, and I wouldn't want to write his name down, would you?
I don't think it would be the end of the world if $2 million were on the line. I think I would be able to be convinced to write Jeremy's name down, but you are right. I hadn't factored in just how exciting it's going to be to have Val out there yet another loved one's visit, and everyone's, I'm sure, going to be highly suspicious that she's that they've got some other scheme to cook it up.
Yes, and I don't know. I don't even remember if Jeremy was like my actual winner pick going into Cambodia. I know I felt really good about him, and I kind of feel really good about him here. It's just I don't know why I am like hesitant with this pick, because if everybody identifies that same kind of thing, that he could be such a threat in this season, then maybe he does rise to the same kind of threat level as a Parvati or Rob or Sandra or whoever, because they know that he's so good. But I don't know, maybe just him being that good will lead him farther into the game. Did he get any votes cast against him before that tribal council where him and Kelly both played the idols? I want to say no.
I have no idea.
Okay, I want to say that the first votes he got against him that season were at that tribal council where he got the 3 votes against him, used his idol, and obviously was safe. So, I mean, he has proved pretty recently that he can go far and not have votes cast against him.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. And Jeremy, I think, could be another person in that kind of premium middle-ish tier, like upper middle-ish tier of being viewed as a threat, where people are going to be willing to work with them early. They're not going to ever really be viewed as the figurehead unless they go really far out of their way. But then come end game time, people are still going to receive, you know, jury time, people are still going to respect them. I think, Jeremy could be completely in that mold.
I really hope so. I think if we can get the Jeremy and Natalie reunion and have it last longer than like on the main island, not on any kind of, I don't want to see them reunited on Extinction. But if we can have that back together, that's like a dream come true.
Yeah, I had Jeremy, I think he was like fifth or sixth from the bottom for me, just because I have a very hard time seeing him go through the entire game with no one ever once again being wise to Jeremy being a threat eventually. But compared to the other people left on the board, I think this was a very good pick.
Yeah, so I'm trying to see what I got him for in the auction draft. I know I got I got him. I thought it was a steal. I got Jeremy for $15 in the auction draft that I did, which, like I said, I really don't understand how he went for that cheap.
What was the total prize pool in that one?
It was $230.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a little above average equity he would be required of him for that to be a good buy.
What?
Sorry. like the average person is worth like 11 and change or whatever.
Okay.
230
yeah,
divided
yeah.
by 20, 11 and something, yeah. 1150 or whatever. And so Jeremy would need like 140% of average equity, so you'd need like 7% total equity, and I think he's got that.
Yeah, you're throwing too many numbers at
okay,
me.
Sorry.
I just point is, I feel
regardless.
Good.
Jeremy, I think, has been a good buy in a lot of these various drafts that have been going on. So there goes Jeremy. It is back over to me for the final two selections, and then you will get the default player. So with my next pick, I'm actually very happy about getting this person at this point, where one of my main kind of hypotheses that I have been probably just convincing myself of too much over these last couple of months is that Nick is going to be the new Vetus. And I feel like Nick Wilson, along the same lines, if that is going to be the case, it's hard to get votes cast against you when you're off on Edge of Extinction, at least as far as we know at this point. And so Nick, in the final round of the draft, I feel at least like there's plenty of value in terms of him being an early boot and then just getting it all out of the way and not being there to have a ton of votes cast against him. But at the same time, if he is there, I see him being someone that is routinely viewed as worth voting for.
I agree. And I like Nick has first boot written all over him for me. I've been saying that since like day one of finding out the cast. I think that he just does not really fit in with the rest of these guys. I think there's just so many connections, and I know he's the most recent winner, so that probably has something to do with it. But I don't know. I totally agree with the Vetus call. I feel like he's just not somebody that you can feel comfortable with. I don't think he's somebody that he proved in the finale of his season that something doesn't go his way, he kind of freaks out. Maybe he's learned from that. He obviously had a chance to watch that back and see how bad it looked, and maybe since this is so recent to when he won, he can very easily go in and correct that. I don't know. I don't feel good about him, and I just have to hope at this point that he gets like 9 votes dumped on him in the first week to put you down to a significant disadvantage to
yeah.
start.
All right. So there goes Nick. There are two names left on the board, Parvati and Boston Rob. And these two for me were the clear, there is no way they are making it through this season unscathed. If they make it to the end, they will have picked up some votes along the way every single time. Mm-hmm. So with the final pick, I am going to take Parvati and leave you Boston Rob. And that was, incidentally, the other major deviation I made was knowing that idled votes still do count. I may have had Boston Rob come off my board even sooner, but I am a believer in production interference being very real, and I would imagine that if it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Boston Rob getting the heads up on how to get the idols on season 40. But to take them in order, to go back to my pick of Parvati, I feel like everything we've ever seen of Parvati when she is a returning player is her being an immediate target, but her also sticking around for quite a while despite picking up a bunch of votes. So with that kind of reputation, I think Parvati is a very understandable late round draft pick here.
Parvati might have honestly been a steal, which just thinking about it now, I mean, look at like Heroes versus Villains. It was just every one of the early votes that she went to was like, you know, we have to get Parvati. We have to get Parvati. You know, the people on the outside are saying this, and it just doesn't happen. You know, she has enough protection around her. She's built enough of a relationship with the people she's working with where they know that they probably should get Parvati, but they don't actually get Parvati. This is probably a much different player that we're about to get than the player that we saw back in season 16, season 20. You know, I don't think she's going to be playing the same game. I don't know what kind of mentality she even has to be out there. Like we were saying earlier, I was like, you know, she's probably got one of the biggest appearance fees to be there in the first place. It's a $2 million prize in the line. I have no doubt in my mind that she wants it just as bad as anybody else. I just can't even begin to think of what her strategy might be going into the season. I don't know what she's going to try because I have to imagine she's coming at it from a different angle. And if that angle works out for her, maybe she'll be just as successful as she has been in, you know, getting to the end. But if not, I don't know. Maybe the votes just start getting dumped on her early, which she's been able to avoid. I don't know. Is it like where do you come down? Like ultimately, do you think that she's going to be successful or is she just going to crumble?
I could see this easily being a situation where Parvati shows up. Everyone obviously knows what the scoop is when it comes to how talented and dangerous Parvati is in a game of Survivor. I mean, she's got to have potentially the longest highlight reel of duplicity in the history of the game at this point. And that is something that I'm sure is going to be a force against which she has to contend every day that she remains in the game. But at the same time, based on everything I've ever seen out of Parvati, yeah. I would say only a fool would discount Parvati Shallow on this season.
Right. I mean, and do you see her in a similar way that I do, just that she might be like a free agent? She might just be like, she doesn't have any clear number ones going out there, does she?
None that I am aware of, although it wouldn't surprise me if she's kind of on the periphery of the OG alliance. I'm sure there has been plenty of discussion going on, and I would imagine plenty of them see value in having her at least early on as an ally and a kind of meat shield.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously no, you know, not a whole lot of love between Parvati and Boston Rob on that season. There's been so many interviews between Parvati, well, pretty much from Parvati in the past couple of years. If I ever go back, I need to make sure that I beat Sandra. So, like, Sandra has that logged. She knows that that Parvati is coming to make sure that Sandra does not succeed. So, in that sense, I'm worried about her. But like I said, in the other sense of just, I don't know who, you know, who she's going to be linked up with that is going to make her as big of a threat as a Robin Amber or a Robin Tyson Sandra, whatever. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, any number of scenarios are in play, I would say, for Parvati for sure. And that leaves us only with the default pick, Boston Rob. As I mentioned, I feel like there are virtually no timelines where Rob makes it through without receiving votes at multiple tribal councils, just because I would imagine a lot of effort, you know, many efforts against Boston Rob are going to potentially be made more difficult by the producers. So I could see him getting the minority of votes quite often.
Yeah, for sure. I guess it's just fate that he ended up back on my team here. I also have him in the auction draft that I did, which I remember I didn't even mean to do. I think I got him for like $12. I just thought that I'd be like making somebody, I thought I was raising the price on somebody else, and then it turned out that, nope, they were just sticking me with Rob for $12. I don't know. This is not Rob's season to win. But this is modern Survivor, so this might be Rob's season to win.
Well, that's the thing is, I feel like with the news of Edge of Extinction being back in play, Rob has maybe been the biggest riser in the social media Survivor stock watch kind of game that is played on Twitter all the time, where, you know, if I were someone who bought Boston Rob at $12 to win $230, Edge of Extinction would be the best news imaginable.
Sure, but I mean, is he actually as much of that Boston Rob, who dominated in challenges as he is, you know, today? Like, is he going to be able to compete with literally anybody that's like 10 years younger than him in whatever the challenge is? And I mean, like you said about Parvati, like, you'd be a fool to count Parvati out. I think be a fool to count Rob out at any point. He's, you know, certainly going to be putting his all into it. It's just a matter of, I don't know. I think he's going to possibly be outrun by a Wendell or by a Ben, even just somebody else that's out there that is just a little bit faster than him.
I mean, I think we can count on the finale night Edge of Extinction re-entry challenge being something intensely physical, followed by a very difficult puzzle to maximize Rob's equity to return.
That's fair. You know, I wasn't really thinking about the puzzle. Was there a puzzle on Chris's challenge?
I don't know, but there will be. It will be a difficult puzzle to make sure that if a Tyson or a Wendell or a Ben beats him on the really physical part, he will still have potentially even the lion's share of equity on the puzzle.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah. Rob just overall, I feel like is going to be one of the toughest cases to predict, just because everyone is going to know he's going to be such a focal point, and it is impossible to anticipate how they're going to react to that.
For sure. And we've been talking this entire podcast about, like pretty much what you just said. He's got all of these numbers around him that you have to imagine he's going to be working with, that he's going to be sending off on little missions, hey, Tyson, you're on that tribe, obviously. You know, you go make something happen over there. I'll go make something happen over here. So he's definitely the one to watch, I guess. I'm already making my first preseason block here. He's definitely the most important player out there just to start the season. But I think most people at home are kind of hoping that it doesn't stay that way.
How excited are you the season plays out? Sorry, how excited are you for Survivor 54?
What do you mean?
You're Sir 5-4, whatever. All right.
Oh, shut up.
Weak effort. On my part, not on yours. I very much like your Sir 5-4-3-2-1.
Thank you.
So, to quickly run back through the teams, just for the official record, Team Liguori, with the first overall pick, and then in the order that they were drafted, we have Ethan, Yule, Natalie, Amber, Adam, Wendell, Tyson, Ben, Jeremy, and Boston Rob. Their collective votes against them will be totaled up against my team, which is Sandra, Denise, Michelle, Danny, Kim, Tony, Sarah, Sophie, Nick, and Parvati. So actually, interestingly, I have 2 men and 8 women, which means you have 8 men and 2 women.
All right, so here's where I'll let you in on a little bit of my drafting strategy. The one thing that I thought to do before we came on was to look at Game Changers and Cambodia and take a look at how many votes were cast against women to how many votes were cast against men during the entire season. And these numbers might not be 100% accurate. I did it one time, did not go back through and fact check it. I just really quickly counted up the votes. And it looks like in Game Changers, there was 80 votes cast against the women and 47 cast against the men. And then in Cambodia, it looks like there was also 80 and for the women and 53 against the men. So there's a pretty big margin there. And wow. I have to say that that did help me out in terms of where I was going with some of these picks. If I was thinking between, a man and a woman, I did kind of tend to lean towards the man.
I see. I was going completely the opposite direction. So story checks out on how these drafts teams ended up forming. But that is a really interesting set of statistics there. And, regardless of how this ends up going, I applaud you for doing your research and implementing that kind of strategy, because that could absolutely be a trend we see continue, especially in an era where I think people are going to be more nervous about idols and advantages potentially than any all-star season we've ever seen before. Yep. It'll be interesting to see how that ends up going. So there we have it. There are 2 teams. Matt, did you give me an official winner pick along the way here?
I didn't, and that's because I don't have one, and I haven't made one. I didn't make one before the season was filming. I didn't make one at any point, so I don't know. I don't know if I can be honest and give you a name now, because I feel like I'll just be kind of making it up. I really just – I'm too much of a little bitch to not – to give you a name. I don't have one.
Okay. That's, is listen, that, is that's, that allowed? That is the Dom Harvey answer, so you're really doing a good job here.
I can't. I mean, it's a 1 in 20 shot. These people are just how am I ever going to get the right person? And I just hate losing so much, so I didn't pick one.
Okay. Well, gotta respect that mentality for sure. Ligori, what do you have going on these days that people can be checking out?
What do I have going on? Not a whole lot, honestly. I usually this time of year, I'm all wrapped up in the Big Brother content. I haven't been totally free to do as many of the morning updates or the podcasts as I would have liked to, but, hopefully I'll hop back on some of those. So if you are watching Big Brother and, you're toughing it out for the rest of the season, I'm sure I'll be on something somewhere, or at least, on Twitter. You can catch plenty of the Big Brother discussion on there. So, I was just on the Big Brother, the RHAP B&B with Mike and Liana. So if you have not listened to that yet, we had a lot of fun, great time over there. So, Big Brother, lots of fun. Colin highly recommends.
Yeah, absolutely. Seal of approval for sure. He is, of course, on Twitter at Matt Ligori. And Matt, I was thinking earlier today, congratulations are probably overdue, if congratulations is even the right word for this, but I believe you are, as of one of your relatively recent appearances, only the second person ever to log double-digit appearances on the Dom and Colin podcast.
That is very exciting. Do we know, what is it, 10 now, or?
I don't know the exact count, and I'm sure Kaz is number one. He's got to be in, the 15 to 20 range, but between the challenge coverage over the last couple of years and all the Survivor and Big Brother stuff, that has come up along the way, I'm sure you're at 10 by now.
Well, it's an honor seriously, I really have a great time every time you guys invite me on. And I mean, it's mostly you, Dom, I think, invited me on once with Gagan, and that never happened ever again. So I greatly appreciate it at any time that you'll have me back to talk about whatever it is. Because I mean, the challenge podcasts are so much fun. I think we definitely have a great time every time we get together for those. Anytime, keep calling. My phone's, you got my number.
All right. I will keep calling. Hashtag #COLIN. All right.
That was fine. That was fine.
Sure. Yeah. So I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. Of course, email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. And to get many other season 40 drafts, as well as some old Survivor season rewatches, Ligori mentioned we've already done Heroes versus Villains. Fiji is complete up there, BB7, BB10, and we are in the middle of Survivor Guatemala, which has been a lot of fun. Patreon.com/domandcolin. Thank you guys who have made it this far. We will talk to you soon, I'm sure. Take care, everybody.